Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Congressman Chris Gibson, or shall I call you Colonel?
I go by Chris. Thank you.
Chris, Iraq, you're a specialist. You've been over there. You know what this is like. And I have to say how much I admire you, because you have, from the very beginning, saying no boots on the ground. Let's not do that. What should we do?
Well, the proximate cause for the situation that we're in right now is the poor leadership of the Prime Minister Maliki. You know, in 2007, when I was there during the surge, there were several factors that led to the transformation of the security environment that allowed for the new Iraq to have a real opportunity and chance. And, you know, yes, that surge made a difference to allow the Iraqis to have a conversation about what they wanted their future to be like. The Special Operations Command contributions were important, targeting the al-Qaeda leadership. But at least as important was the fact that the Sunni tribes had decided that they'd had enough. They did not want to partner with al-Qaeda. They wanted them to be gone from the country. They had seen what had happened firsthand. There were pockets of the country where al-Qaeda had seized control. They were cutting off the fingers of folks who were smoking. They were taking teenage girls as part of their harem, and they were implementing Sharia, harsh Sharia law. And the Sunni tribesmen, their leaders, came to us and they said, look, we're not crazy about you. We'll deal with that later. We don't know what we want, but we know what we don't want, and we don't want them, and we want your help because we're going to kick them out. And that was 2007, and that led to a significant change in the security environment and the opportunity for a new Iraq to emerge. Unfortunately, the prime minister has fumbled this opportunity. He locked up the top Sunni political leader, Hashemi. He denied due process. He has kicked Sunni leadership out of the army, out of the administration. And what you've seen is a disaffection, an alienation. And now these same Sunni tribes are looking out of that frustration to allow for a new opportunity. And so they've entered into this unholy alliance with ISIL. Now, I don't think it'll last. I don't predict it'll last. But in places like Mosul, where ISIL came, the Iraqi security forces, in the main, many of them Sunni from that area, decided not to fight. They took their uniform off and left because they didn't believe in Maliki and they didn't believe in that central government in Baghdad. And you saw that in Fallujah. So in essence, what we have now is three different areas of Iraq. You have a Sunni area, a Shia area, and a Kurd area. But it is reversible. There are elections.
I'm sorry, because some people think it should be divided up. Let each have a third.
I don't think that's the best course of action. And I would tell you, I think the Iraqis would agree. And here's why. The best course of action is one where they unite. There's a sense of nationalism, an opportunity for a flourishing Iraq. Because the danger in that potential course of action is what happens with ISIL, the al-Qaeda, because the Sunni tribes are going to have to deal with that if they stay in that kind of situation. The Kurds, by the way, are going to find that very destabilizing, because if you have somebody right on your border there that's interested in fomenting terrorism, that's no good for them.
To say nothing of the Turks on the other side.
And the Turks, it's very explosive. So, you know, there were elections that took place in Iraq on the 30th of April, requiring by constitution a new government to form. It's certainly up to them to decide what this government looks like. But I would tell you, if they pick a Kurd to be the prime minister, I think that would be very wise, because it would show an inclusiveness, an opportunity to build again of a new united Iraq. And just to give you a sense of the numbers, you know, you're talking just under a million in uniform for the for Iraq in terms of the army, the National Guard, and their police forces.
And they can't win a fight.
Against less than 10,000 hardened killers. But again, I would tell you it's because they just didn't believe in Maliki. You bring forward a new government that unites the people of Iraq, and they'll expel al-Qaeda,
and how
these
to do
extremists.
It. I'm sorry for interrupting, but how to do it?
Well,
how do you get rid of Maliki?
Well, I mean, that's for them. Remember, we should not be in the regime
but
change.
But clearly we are.
We can play a role if they're asking for our advice. But I would also tell you that increasingly the leaders inside Iraq recognize that the situation that they're in has been caused by their own alienation of parts major. I mean, Sunni are about 20 to 25% of the population. If they don't feel like they have a shot, they're fairly reasonable, by the way, in their expectation. They know they're not going to be back in charge of Iraq, but they just want a fair shot. With these opportunity with this new government forming, if they can bring in Sunni, and by the way, there has been some television events, opportunities to show this kind of potential unity in Iraq. If they can then form the government, include the Kurds, I think the Kurds could play a major role here in helping stabilize the situation, which is why I found it interesting that Secretary of State Kerry spent 2 days with the Kurds. Because, and you heard the Kurds come out and say, well, maybe it's time for our own independence. I think they were, quite frankly, trying to position themselves for a strong negotiating hand with the new government.
Have you met Maliki?
I have. I haven't met Maliki.
What was your sense?
No, it was quite an experience, actually, because, you know, this was July of 07. I was with my, at the time, I was the operations officer for all forces north of Baghdad, and I was with my chief of staff at the time, and we were with the Sunni sheikhs from the surrounding area, and we were expecting Maliki, and he was to fly in from Baghdad. And so in the, you know, 20 or so minutes before he came, all the Sunni sheikhs were one-upping each other. When Maliki gets here, I'm going to tell him this. Oh, yeah, when Maliki gets here, I'm going to tell him that. And I just, I looked over at the chief. I said, I don't know if this was really a good idea. We'll have to see how this thing plays out. About 120 degrees, I'm pulling down on my IBA trying to get air into it. And all of a sudden, you hear the helicopter coming. And as the helicopter then lands, it felt like forever, but it was probably only like 3 or 4 minutes, you hear this. And you hear the door slam, and here comes Maliki. Maliki comes right to the front of the room. He's got a bag of money. He slams that bag of money here, and he says, I'm here to help. And you know what? You could have heard crickets. All these Sunni sheikhs that were like at one moment going to tell him off, nothing. And I turned to the chief. I said, you know, this just might work out here. You know, it is the case that in Iraq, they have a long history of this strongman type of leader. And they'll look to, and there was an opportunity for Maliki to really be a leader who united them. But his sectarian rule has just poisoned the well to such a degree that the Sunni then decided to give harbor. Because that's really the problem here. And I'm telling you, this is reversible. If we're involved trying to get the Iraqi people to form a more inclusive government, I think that they could reverse this situation and the al-Qaeda, these extremists, could be pushed right out.
We got 2 minutes left. There's a campaign going on, obviously. Your district is divided between Republicans and Democrats. You've got Sean Eldredge running against you. What's the quality of the campaign? Are you satisfied with the way it's being conducted?
Well, I feel, you know, very warm support across the 19th Congressional District in a very challenging time. I'm working hard to bring people together to get things done. This has been my situation since I was a young boy, the captain, the point guard of the basketball team, then in the Army, bringing people together in tough circumstances to get things done. And now in the Congress, I'm a leader in this group, no labels. And we played a part in bringing forward the first federally enacted budget in 5 years by bringing forward no budget, no pay. And by when the president signed that, that put pressure. The Senate brought their first budget in 4 years, which set the stage for the compromise between Murray, Senator Murray, and Ryan bringing forward that. And we were able to replace, at least partially replace, sequester, important for our domestic priorities and our national security priorities, give continuity in government operations, reduce uncertainty in the business environment. And no labels played a role in that. And
no labels meaning stop the Republican-Democratic business. Let's all get together.
Yeah, let's work. Yeah. Let's work together to bring functionality back to the Congress. And with the Farm Bill, listening carefully to our constituents, giving them a voice in Washington, over 24 initiatives that came directly from our constituents signed into law by the President of the United States. And that's empowering. You talk about constituent-driven legislation. So on the one hand, someone who has served our country, has fought for us, gives his pension back to the taxpayers.
You're talking about yourself here. You give your pension back.
I give my pension back. You know, I have self-imposed term limits. I've said I'll serve not more than 8 years. I have no stocks and bonds. On the one hand, you have somebody who's a force to try to bring people together to get things done against an opponent who, at the age of 26, with very little experience and absolutely no ties to the district, moved into the district after the last election explicitly to buy this seat in Congress. It isn't going to work.
He has more money than you do. How do you handle that?
Oh, I think there's some things that money can't buy. And I think that there's a strong sense of connection that I'm making, not just with Republican independents, but a fair number of Democrats that see what's going on and they reject it. And, you know, it was interesting that I think when you don't grow up here, you just don't fully understand the issues that we're having. And for my opponent to come out and say he would have voted against the Farm Bill, Look, there's two problems with that. One is our agricultural community really counts on that, and the public-private partnerships, the conservation community that really relies on that, those helping expand broadband, those fighting Lyme disease, we have positive initiatives in all that. That's number one. Number two is it was a compromise. You know, when my opponent says, well, you know, I'm fed up with the gridlock and everything, and then he says he would have voted against the compromises, he would be part of the problem. That's the issue here, is that he's so strident in his views that he doesn't realize that in this day and age, what experience tells you is that you've got to work together.
Chris Gibson, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being here in the studio with us. We always love it when you show up, and it means a lot to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.